Greetings, this is Agent K coming to you live from GangstersOut.com. Today we're going to talk about the Hells Angels and the Canadian drug trade. Now, although that seems like a really broad topic, we're going to focus in on a handful of examples and just simply target them, just so there's no waffling or debating. The facts speak for themselves. First, we're going to start with Winnipeg. Not long ago, I published a family photo from Stony Mountain showing Sean Wolfe, along with Deli, also known as Dale Donovan, and Famous Amos and Al Lebras and a whole crew of people in the Stony Mountain Correctional Facility. And what that does is it shows the Hells Angels' continued support of the Zig Zag Crew's drug trade. Now, before they were all arrested for cocaine trafficking, you know, the Hells Angels were posting pictures of Hells Angels colors with their arms around someone wearing Zig Zag Crew colors. You know, clearly that was an act of intimidation, saying that the Hells Angels support the Zig Zag Crew, and if you fuck with the Zig Zag Crew, you fuck with the Hells Angels. And for that protection, the Zig Zag Crew, they didn't just sell crack for the Hells Angels. In addition to selling the Hells Angels drugs, they also had to pay them protection money. The Bobbsey twins, I forget their names, sergeant-at-arms of the Hells Angels, they came and they were caught on wire, giving these guys a hard time, saying, look, if you hadn't paid your protection money, your dues, then get a real job, okay, because this is what you have to do. So the Zig Zag Crew were a puppet club that had to pay for the Hells Angels' protection. And also, the Hells Angels also profited from the Zig Zag Crew selling their cocaine. So it was a double dip. You know, the Hells Angels made money from these puppets selling their drugs. In addition to that, the Hells Angels got protection money from these guys. So it was a double dip. You know, loyalty, honor, whatever. Anything for a price. So basically, this photo in Stony Mountain, which was taken fairly recently, it shows Dale Donovan and Sean Wolfe with Famous Amos and Al Lebras and several others. Now, Famous Amos was a guy, he was a member of the Zig Zag Crew. He was caught on video cutting crack cocaine for the Hells Angels. That's why we call him Famous Amos, because he was caught on video. There's no debating that. There's no waffling around that. Al Lebras was a longtime member of the Zig Zag Crew. Okay, so Sean Wolfe and Deli posing with these guys, shows that they still support them. You know, I don't know if they still have to pay protection money when they're in prison, but the fact is that Sean Wolfe and Deli supporting these guys in prison shows that they're still, the Hells Angels and the Zig Zag Crew are still connected. You know, the drug trade that the Zig Zag Crew were responsible for, the Hells Angels profited from and were also responsible for. So clearly that was a pretty large criminal organization. The drug trafficking, Sean Wolfe and Deli were convicted of drug trafficking, cocaine trafficking, and they were incarcerated. Now, after that happened, some time went by, as early as March 2012, recently, there was another police operation called Operation Flatline, and the Dale Sweeney, the new president of the Winnipeg Hells Angels, and his brother Rod were both arrested, along with several others, in another drug sweep. So once this one group goes to jail, another group takes over. So the Hells Angels are still in Winnipeg dealing drugs. So clearly that's a case law, a past precedent. The Hells Angels in Winnipeg use puppet clubs to sell drugs. That is a criminal organization. That's what they do. And we can't really debate that. That's what happened. Not only are they responsible for a large part of the violence associated with the drug trade in Winnipeg, they're also responsible for the drug war in Winnipeg between them and the Rock Machine. You know, the Rock Machine were big, you know, many years ago in Quebec. Nobody heard about the Rock Machine being in Winnipeg. And Joseph Strachan, he crossed over to the Rock Machine after they killed the leader of another Hells Angels pop-up group called LHS. LHS stood for Loyalty, Honor, and Silence. Well, the loyalty and honor and the silence is part because there is no loyalty and honor. They got stabbed in the back by the Hells Angels. The Hells Angels killed one of their own people, Beckham Zanilli. He was from Thompson, partly he was back and forth from North Van, but he was originally from Thompson, Manitoba. And he was the leader of the LHS, a Hells Angels puppet group. And all of a sudden, you know, the Ontario Hells Angels wanted to take over the drug trade in Thompson. And the other Hells Angels said, okay. And they killed one of their own guys. And Joseph Strachan's was like, what the hell? This is bullshit. And understandably so, it was. And then Billy Bowden, he was caught in Whistler. He was friends of this guy, Beckham. And they told him that, okay, you suck it up and you support his murder or we'll target you. Like, what the hell is that? I mean, this is what you're building an organization of unloyal people. Where do you think that's going to lead? I mean, everyone gets pissed off because I keep talking about the Lexenville massacre in Quebec many, many years ago. You know, the Hells Angels ambushed one of the Laval Hells Angels chapter, and they executed them. And Biff Hamill was a prospect, and he was present when the Hells Angels executed his sponsors. And what did he do? He seized the opportunity. He took advantage of the fact that they executed his sponsors. And he used that as an opportunity to promote himself and the organization. Well, what kind of organization are you going to build when you have puppets like that? Self-serving, backstabbing, betraying puppets. It's not going to be a road to a successful organization. And the LNR, love and respect, honor, those are lies. They don't exist. You know, when you have a puppet that's willing to stand by and watch his sponsors be executed just so he can promote himself in the organization, that's pretty lame. That's pretty messed up. And that's what they expected Billy Bowden to do. So as a result, you know, we have division. We have the Rock Machine rise up in Winnipeg, and they were firebombing Hells Angels, and Hells Angels were firebombing them, and they were back and forth. The firebombing's quiet down now. But ultimately, the Hells Angels were not only involved in the drug trade in Winnipeg, but they were directly responsible for the violence, subsequent violence and drug war between the Rock Machine and the Hells Angels, because they killed one of their own. And part of their own people defected. It wasn't a matter of a bunch of wannabes who couldn't make the cut, who were jealous of the Hells Angels. These were members that were betrayed, and they said, what the hell? This is bullshit. And they were right. You know, I'm not condoning violence, you know, in the drug war, but I'm saying that killing one of your own guys and telling his friends to suck it up or we'll target you, that's ridiculous. And that, my friends, is exactly what the pattern of the Hells Angels' involvement in the Canadian drug trade has been. This is what happened in Lexenville. This is what happened in Winnipeg. This is what keeps happening over and over again. That same pattern is being repeated over and over again. Now, here in Surrey, in 2009, the gang war was pretty big. Everyone freaked out when I said my theory was that the Hells Angels were involved with the Surrey 6 murder because they wanted someone to take over the leadership of the Red Scorpions, who are affiliated with the UN, and make them affiliated with the Hells Angels. And everyone freaked out when I said that at the time, and then sure enough, a few years later, Larry Amaro, poster boy for the White Rock Hells Angels, is shot in Kelowna with Jonathan Bacon, and who was shot dead. And Jonathan Bacon was despised in Surrey. The Bacon brothers were despised in Surrey. The Bacon brothers were involved with the Surrey 6 murder, which was so outrageous they got the public all riled up, is because innocent people were executed, you know, and that was completely unnecessary. You know, executing innocent people is unacceptable. And it just, that's why there was such a public outcry against that event. Now, the recent news as well, Randy Knacker has been shot dead. Now, Randy Knacker has had a lot of enemies, but it's no secret that he was a poster boy for Larry Amaro. You know, Kim Boland posted a picture of Larry Amaro and Randy Knacker together, and Randy's looks like he's drinking some GHB and grabbing a feel of Larry's pecs and getting aroused. It looks pretty pathetic. You know, here's a puppet that just, you know, worships Larry Amaro and ends up dead. But the point is, you know, the Hells Angels in the 2009 gang war were pretty effective at keeping a low profile. But it's pretty clear that the Hells Angels used violence to take over the independent soldiers. It used to be an independent Indo-Canadian gang. Then all of a sudden the Hells Angels come in. Some of the leaders die in mysterious car accidents. They get shot. A lot of buff, you know, white guys on steroids get involved. And all of a sudden it's another Hells Angels puppet club. And Randy Knacker's involvement with Larry Amaro was pretty clear of that. And James Riach was another one. He, along with Randy Knacker, was with the Bacon Brothers in the famous Castle Fun Park meeting in Kevlar before the Surrey 6 Meters. So we have murder. So we have members of the Independent Soldiers who were puppets for the Hells Angels plotting with the Bacon Brothers before the Bacon Brothers were involved in the Surrey 6 murder. So, you know, it's pretty obvious that the Hells Angels were involved in that. You know, before we just said, well, they have to be involved because they're supplying the cocaine and everybody else is fighting over the cocaine that they're supplying. But it went deeper than that. They were, you know, they were playing both sides. You know, they were playing the UN and they were playing the UN's rivals, the arch rivals, the Bacon Brothers. And finally, when a lot of the UN members were arrested and in jail, then Larry Amaro comes out of his closet with his relationship with Jonathan Bacon, which we knew at the time. We knew that Jonathan Bacon and Larry Amaro were close associates at the time, but we couldn't prove it. And all we could prove was, you know, Larry's friends was friends with Bacon Brother friends. But when Larry Amaro and Jonathan Bacon were in Kelowna, they were riding around in that ridiculous boat, steroids and silicone. What a plastic world that is. That's Larry's boat for you. And they were, you know, making a big scene, you know, challenge people to a fight. And they weren't just caught in a chance meeting. They came out of the closet with their relationship, with their business relationship. And as soon as it found out that Larry Amaro was involved with the Bacon Brothers, then he became a target. And now Randy Knacker's dead. You know, so that's a pretty serious thing. So anyways, it's pretty clear that when you look historically, the Hells Angels' involvement in the Quebec Biker War. The Quebec Biker War wasn't a biker war where it was about, you know, our crew versus your crew. The Quebec Biker War was the Hells Angels fighting over the drug turf. And they fought with a rock machine for the drug turf. And that's what happened in Winnipeg. That's what's happening in Vancouver. Vancouver, they don't have any real rivals like they did in Quebec, like they do in Winnipeg. Right now, the Dury DAC group are getting executed. You know, they're getting their drugs from somewhere else, from the UN. They're not getting their drugs from the Hells Angels, and they're getting executed. They're getting wiped off the face of the earth. And most recently, Randy Knacker just got killed, shot dead in Port Moody, just the same place that the recent shooting of one of the Dury DAC group was. So that's a little tit for tat, but in BC, you know, the Hells Angels pretty much control the drug trade, just like Andy Richards, a former police officer, actually still with the Port Moody Police, I believe, but he was quoted in the newspaper talking about how the Hells Angels were using violence to take over the stripper agencies in BC. You know, they were, you know, one older gentleman was beaten up severely and assaulted, and he talked about how the Hells Angels used violence to take over the stripper agencies. And as soon as I read that, I thought, okay, who is this guy? Because all of a sudden, unlike that other Pat Fogarty, who is a complete airhead idiot, finally we have somebody who knows what they're talking about. And so it's pretty clear that in BC, the Hells Angels are directly involved in the drug trade, in the stripper agencies, and in my opinion, the prostitution rings. You know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the Hells Angels' involvement with the Picton farm. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, the public inquiry. Dave Picton was a Hells Angels associate. Hells Angels had a grow-up on site. We talk about Spike and his involvement, the Haney chapter involvement with the Picton farm. There's a lot of crazy things that went down. But the one thing, although Wally Opal committed treason and shut down David Cameron and a lot of the evidence from being submitted, there was a lot of testimony that clearly showed the Hells Angels were directly involved with the Picton Farm. In fact, they were under surveillance by the police for their involvement in the Picton Farm. And a lot of that was swept under the carpet and covered up. So, Hells Angels and the Canadian drug trade, Quebec, biker war, that's what it was all about. Winnipeg, pretty clear. Supporting the Zigzag Crew. Zigzag Crew sold crack for the Hells Angels. They all get busted, and then all of a sudden, Dale Sweeney and the next generation, they all get busted for doing the same thing. So it's pretty clear. And then even back east, you know, Halifax, we have David Giles, the Rusty Vibrator. You know, he's not from East Vancouver. He lives in Kelowna. He's from Halifax. He was part of the 13th Tribe that became members of the Hells Angels. And he came over, became a member of the East Van Hells Angels, and he was living at large in Kelowna, and in Neil Hall's book, The Hells Angels versus the Million Dollar Rat, David Giles was implicated in the Western Wind 1.5-ton cocaine seizure, where no Hells Angels were charged because of a high-ranking RCMP officer, which pulled the plug on that investigation, and that's another tragic event. But in Neil Hall's book, David Giles was the one implicated in that drug seizure. So we have a lot of drugs going on in the country, and like, you know, if somebody's smoking a blunt, that's nobody else's business. You know, no one, as soon as they smoke a blunt, has this burning urge to take an axe to a senior citizen for $5 to buy another blunt. But they do, and they have in Surrey for $5 to buy more crack. Crack is my concern, you know, and they're selling all this pot and bringing back crack cocaine. That messes up our community. That messes up our society. So my beef isn't with pot. You know, 50% of the population in Canada think pot should be legalized. I support decriminalization. I don't support legalization of pot. But I think we should draw a line in the sand and say, you know, crack dealers, let's focus on the crack dealers. Let's stop the public sale of crack. Let's deal with this. And the Hells Angels selling pot and bringing back crack into Canada, it's devastating our communities. You know, it starts in the big cities, and they repeatedly, you know, Prince George, Dawson Creek, Kamloops, they take over smaller cities. Edmonton Hells Angels were very involved in the drug trade. Grand Prairie, they had the baseball team. They get the Hells Angels. They go into a small town, and they start off with, you know, strip bars and clubs, and then all of a sudden it goes to who else? What they're done with the ladies? But they're turning them all into crack hoes. You know, they're selling crack, and then they're forcing things upon people, which is not acceptable. It destroys lives. It destroys communities. And that's my beef. My beef is the crack in the cities and in the small towns. You know, taking a good small town and destroying it with that mess is unacceptable. Eastern Canada, we see a lot of MC movement, like real MC. Like these guys, they're not drug dealers. They actually ride motorcycles, and they actually enjoy riding motorcycles. And we see a lot of these private MCs getting targeted and getting harassed by the dark siders and all these wind demon pricks who freaking drive cafe style bikes and, you know, go to Tim Hortons. I mean, it's absurd. Oh, you're bad, all right. You're freaking, if you had half a brain, you'd be dangerous. But it's pretty pathetic how these small-time wannabes try to push around these other clubs who don't want to sell drugs. And in Eastern Canada, there's a counter-rebellion. They're starting slowly and surely. They're saying enough is enough. You know, we want to ride motorcycles, and we don't want to be involved in the drug trade. And we don't want to be bullied around and pushed around, saying that we're not allowed to wear a patch. So they're starting to fight back, and hopefully we can wish them success, and we can support them in any way we can, because maybe it'll be the MC movement which will save the country from this plague. So it does need to be addressed. It is hard because of the money involved. You know, I remember a story of one police officer pulling over a young kid who had like an obscene amount of cash on his possession. And the police officer was trying to tell the kid, like, you know, this is a dead-end road. You're going to end up dead. It's dangerous. And the kid just looked at him like, are you crazy? Like, look at how much money I have. You know, there's a lot of young kids that want their 30 seconds of fame. You know, they want to be a high roller for 30 minutes, and if they get shot dead, they don't care. They just want their flash in the pan of being a high roller. And it's pretty absurd. I mean, I don't even know what the thing is, the SUVs. I mean, it's like a freaking minivan. Like, I don't understand what the big draw is, you know, to this materialism. You know, Lotus Land, you know, the yuppiness. It's pretty bizarre. But anyways, you know, loyalty and honor and respect aren't something that you can find in a pill or buy in a can. And some of these kids are starting to see that. But it'll take time, and there'll always be people like Biff Hamill. There'll always be people who will stand aside and watch their sponsors get executed and use that to promote themselves and the organization. There'll always be people like that. But I think as long as the old-timers can step back and see that, see it for what it is, then they can pull back and they can realize, okay, we're not going to support that. And these guys are so desperate. Support us, support us, support us. Sounds like somebody else I know. You know, somebody who fell from a lofty position many years ago. You know, I laugh about the Stony Mountain photo of Sean Wolfe. Everyone's got upset. It's like, man, you got a homophobia. Every time you talk about Sean Wolfe, you're talking about his Merle Norman eyebrows and his eye swallow tattoos and stuff. I'm like, come on. He had these two little girly sparrow tattoos. It's perfect justice. I mean, little sparrows? Like, what the hell? He had those covered up, and now he's got dragon tattoos, which, okay, they're much more manly. But this whole thing with the man purse and the Merle Norman eyebrows, I mean, back in the day, that wouldn't fly. You know, oh, yeah, we're trying to be tough, and we've got this man purse, and it's like, you know, you look like a freaking idiot. You know, it's like that Pants on the Ground song with General Larry Platt. You know, that guy was funny. You know, pants on the ground, looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. You look like a freaking idiot with your pants on the ground. And these Merle Norman eyebrows and the man purses, you look like a freaking idiot. You know, so in the last family photo of Sean Wolfe in Stony Mountain, he's got his baseball cap covering up his Merle Norman eyebrows. I don't know if that means he's ashamed of his Merle Norman eyebrows or if they're a little bit bushy and he hasn't had time to go to Merle Norman's in prison. I don't know. But we do know that he's got that big burning ring of fire zigzag tattoo still. And, that's pretty cool. And you have to pay for the Hells Angels protection. Not just selling the Hells Angels drugs, but pay for the Hells Angels protection. There's no loyalty and honor in that, you know, whatever. But, and then, of course, he's got his stage name, Lola, on his stomach. That's really cool. You know, I was joking when I said it was his stage name, that it was Lola. It says Loki, you know, and for anyone who's seen the movie Thor, you know, Thor came out, the Avengers came out. The actor that plays Thor, he's freaking ripped. He looks like a Norse god. And when you see the story behind Thor and his younger stepbrother Loki in the movie Thor and in the movie Avengers, I mean, it's quite funny. In the movie Avengers, you know, Loki's this bad guy who's doing all this stupid stuff because he's jealous of his older brother. He doesn't make the cut. And Hulk comes up to him, and he's ready to kick his ass. Then Loki says, "Stop! I am a god!" And then Hulk just looks at him, grabs him, and smashes the shit out of him like a rag doll. Tosses him to the side and just says, "Puny god." It's quite a humorous part of the movie. But indeed, like, you're going to tattoo Loki on your stomach? Like, why don't you tattoo Thor? Thor is noble, he's good, he's just, he's strong, he's powerful. Loki is this slimy little weasel that does evil, and he's a weasel. You know, he's a fuck-up. And you're going to tattoo that on your stomach, you might as well tattoo an L on your forehead. You know, and consequently, that's what many of these guys do. You know, this whole obsession with appearances is pretty bizarre. But anyways, my main point is that this whole thing about the Hells Angels are just a motorcycle club, the police like to pick on them, and blah, 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 blah. Well, you notice that, you know, I have concerns with some of the things that the police have done and do. You know, the police's RCMP sexual harassment of their own employees has been pretty outrageous. But I do believe in law and order. You know, and I heard one person say, you know, you take half of what the Hells Angels say and half of what the police say, and somewhere in between you find the truth. I found the truth. The Hells Angels sell crack. You know, they're directly involved in the drug trade in Canada. and they're profiting from it. And the reason why there's so much violence is because they get greedy and they betray their own. They execute their own. Most of the gang war in the BC gang war, it's not a rival fighting them. It's them killing their own people, you know, and taking control over the smaller groups. And that's not acceptable. It's just all full of betrayal. And so that Ricky fat ass liar Carmelo, whatever, oh, we're just this, and like, shut the fuck up, Ricky. That Ricky is a pain in the ass. He's a fat ass liar, and he makes me sick, because now we all know that the Hells Angels aren't just, you know, a motorcycle club. It's pretty clear. You know, we had given them the benefit of the doubt. We had hoped, but now it's clear that they're directly involved in the drug trade. It's clear that they murder their own because of greed. And there's no law, there's no honor or loyalty among them at all. And now we know that. So Ricky, Carmella, shut the fuck up. You're a bitch. And I mean, Sean Wolf, Larry Amaral, you know, they may be on steroids, but they're a little bit more, you know, poster boys for the organization. Ricky Carmella is just an idiot, as well as a liar. And but the whole thing, you know, this whole thing about, you know, Sean Wolf and Larry Amaral. I mean, Larry Amaral got shot up. Randy Knacker's dead. Steroids don't make you bulletproof. Any 12-year-old kid can pick up a gun and shoot you dead. And that's pretty clear. That we see that. Now, I just want to remind everybody that these idiots, the Hells Angels in Ontario that caused the gang war in Winnipeg because they killed one of their own to take over the drug trade in Thompson. Have you seen them? Shorts and sneakers on sport bikes? They are the village idiots. Like, how can we be afraid of these guys? The Ontario Hells Angels, shorts and sneakers on sports bikes, those guys are freaking idiots. It's no wonder, you know, the Rock Machine have been empowered, you know, and are opposing them. Now, also recently, we know that there's been more shootings in Ontario because that Paris Hilton guy, whatever his name is, and that other mafiosa guy in Ontario, that mother mafiosa guy, he's not a mafiosa guy. He sucked up to the Risottos, but he was a driver for Paul Thorpe, and Paul Thorpe was found, you know, murdered in the trunk of a car. By who? Well, he was murdered by someone he knew. Someone he knew and he trusted shot him dead. Gee, I think his driver is a prime suspect on that. So here we have this bitch driver for Paul Thorpe gets caught with Paris Hilton, whatever his name. And they do a mob hit in a Toronto sandwich shop and paralyze an innocent survivor. Well, they all recently get out of jail, and all of a sudden there's more shootings in Ontario as a result. As soon as they get out of jail, gee, that's a big surprise. But this idiot, I'll have to look up his name. Peter Scarella, that's the guy's name. Peter Scarella was the driver for Paul Volpe, and all of a sudden, after Paul Volpe was executed by someone he knew, shot in the back. All of a sudden, the driver takes over for the mob boss. It was pretty lame. And Paris Christoforou, or whatever, not Paris Hilton, Paris Christoforou and Mark Perez was the Hells Angels and Hells Angels associate that accompanied him in that hit in the Toronto sandwich shop where that woman was paralyzed by a stray bullet. And those three recently out of prison, and all of a sudden, more people are starting to get shot and die. Now, this Peter Scarella, he might have sucked up to the Risottos. I don't think he's part of the Risotto clan, and I don't think he's going to get executed like the Risottos are in Montreal. Why? Because he's a bitch. He's sucking up to the Hells Angels. And everyone freaked when I expressed my opinion. I said I think the Hells Angels are directly involved with the execution of the Risotto clan in Montreal. Everyone freaked, you know, that's crazy, that's crazy, that's crazy. Well, we know in the book The Sixth Family that the Risottos did business with the Hells Angels. And in fact, I went for lunch about a year ago with an author from Montreal, and he'd been following the Hells Angels for many years. He'd interviewed Mom Boucher, and he said it was the big surprise that back in the day that the Risottos gave the Hells Angels in Montreal the heroin trade. And obviously the Risottos got a cut from it, but they allotted the Hells Angels that business. And as far as I'm concerned, it looks like they got greedy and took over, you know, and everyone says, oh, that's crazy. But I was, you know, looking up, you know, French translations, English translations of French newspapers where there was that branch of the mafia, the Granby family or whatever. They weren't really big. They weren't really significant. But they hooked up with the Hells Angels, and they were threatening the Rizzutos. There's several cases. I've documented it on the blog. But there are several cases where one time they got in beef, with a total beef with the Rizzutos, and on a wiretap it said that bikers wanted one of the Rizzutos members dead or whatever. And it was because it was the Hells Angels. It wasn't the Rock Machine that were fucking the Rizzutos. I mean, at one time, the Hells Angels did business with the Rizzutos, but the documentation from that Granby family that hooked up with the Hells Angels, they had beef with the Rizzutos. And now, I mean, when you see the way the Rizzuto families were killed, you know, one, a sniper in his house, that was almost military, you know, but the firebombing of a funeral home, that's low life. Like, I'm sorry, you know, people can say drug dealers are drug dealers, but the Sicilian mafia, they had a code. And sure, some people broke the code by targeting family members instead of targets. But all in all, the Italian mafia had a code. And, you know, burning a funeral home, that's very un-Italian. That's very un-Catholic. That's very Hell's Angel. That's all I'm going to say on that. You know, somebody who's got a helmeted skull with devil horns and the number 666. That's our logo, guys. That's who we are. Not a lot of Catholics support that kind of thing, right? And but that's who they are. That's what they're about. So anyways, I do think that the Hells Angels are directly involved with the execution of the Rizzutos in Montreal. That's my opinion. But it's pretty clear that the Hells Angels are directly involved with the drug trade across Canada. It's documented in Winnipeg, it's documented in BC, and it's documented in Eastern Canada, and it's documented in Quebec. So that is documented. So there you have it. Hells Angels control the Canadian drug trade. Got you on the rise.